You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones. Unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. Please be advised that this production may contain strobe effects, loud or sudden noises, nudity, and but probably not. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
It's cool. Dogs are fickle.
I know.
Not as fickle as cats. Cats will they'll stab you in the back. You better be careful of a cat.
Most cats they don't anymore, but they would just pounce in my face all the time. And I would be like, but why don't you do that thing where you leave people alone and don't want to be near them? Because that's what I want from
you. It's one or the other. If you have the time and inclination to go and pet that cat, they're like, screw you, lady. I don't want you anywhere near me, but if you're trying to get work done, they are on your keyboard.
And I just never want to pet them. I'm not a cat person.
Yeah,
so
I like cats.
I just want to be left alone.
Sure.
And
you're like a cat.
I am. And so, but they don't leave me alone. It's gotten better, though, because my one friend, Harry, he's majestic.
Aww.
He's very pretty. He leaves me the crap alone.
Nice.
And if I want to go pet him, he'll let me.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's a good cat.
I feel like cats just sense innately what you want from them, mm-hmm. and they do the exact opposite.
Yeah, most of them do. So I was like, Harry's a keeper. I don't know about anybody else's cat.
What kind of cat is Harry?
He's just this orange, fluffy beautifulness.
Oh, nice ginger cat.
Yeah, he's great.
I've always wanted to be a true ginger. So sad that I wasn't born that way.
You just have to be the Lucy kind. That's good, too.
That is good. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what I needed to hear. Oh, sweet pea. You can be Lucy, too. She is kind of a Lucy.
Is she?
Yeah, I'd say.
You think so?
Yeah. She's a little off the wall. She makes me laugh. She also makes me think.
Oh, Lucy. Well, on this week's episode, mm-hmm. we are sort of going to be with the theme of it's April and it's Easter.
Yes.
And so...
the Lord has risen.
He's risen. We're not focusing on, bunnies.
No.
So... No. Sorry, not sorry, because I'm sure there's a musical
God.
About bunnies, but we're going to talk about, the resurrection type of... that's going to be the theme. Doesn't mean every musical we talk about is necessarily about Jesus,
yes.
but,
Do you think in that play Harvey that was the Easter Bunny? Or was it just some random stranger bunny?
Well, so I have never seen the play, but I have seen the Jimmy Stewart movie a couple of times. And the way he describes him being dressed, I don't think it's the Easter Bunny.
I don't know. I've seen the Easter Bunny in some pretty outrageous outfits.
I don't. Maybe.
Depending.
Yeah.
On, you know, which CVS you buy from.
Oh, gosh.
I loved Easter. Did you love Easter growing up?
Easter was fine. It was, I mean, we just got candy.
Yeah.
And I didn't love, like, I liked dyeing the eggs, but if we didn't do it, that's okay, too.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, because the egg dyeing thing was never a thing.
No. And then, I liked wearing a new dress, but, mm-hmm. like, the shopping for a new dress or trying to find one, not fun for me.
Ugh. Missing out. I loved it. It's the only time in my life that I think I actually enjoyed
shopping. Mm-hmm.
So our tradition, yes, we did go shopping for
the Easter outfit,
but we would always get a hat and new shoes as well as the dress. Like, it was always like a big thing. And then we would wake up on Easter morning, and before church, we would get our baskets overnight. Mom and Dad would sneak them in the room like the Easter Bunny was leaving them, but we knew that it wasn't the Easter Bunny because we know that God was the reason for Easter.
Right.
Anyway. Right. And then we would, like, get so much candy and then one, like, toy, like a Barbie or a whatever, mm-hmm. With the Easter basket as well. It was so good. I loved it. It's candy, you know. How can you say no to candy? Mm-hmm. I do remember one year. My mom and I were going shopping for my new shoes, and I found these, like, pink patent leather little Mary Janes.
So cute.
And those were the ones that I wanted. And Mom was like, you know, Pamela, pink doesn't always go with everything that you wear. Maybe we should look at some other choices, like these black ones. There's some white ones over there. Mm-hmm. And I tried everything on, and every time it was like, nope, I don't want these. I want the pink ones. Nope, I don't like these. I want the pink ones. And so she finally caved in and let me get the pink patent leather, and I wore them everywhere. Inside the house, walking the dog around the yard.
If you love something, then you will wear it all the time.
It definitely sparked joy.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
Oh, cute. And then it was like, I had another Easter story. Yeah. Easter is like huge. I love Easter. My grandmother and my cousin Jill were visiting. I must have been six. Mm-hmm. Six or seven. Jill is quite a bit older than me, so I think she might have been like 15 or 16. But it was super exciting to have her there. Like, we were all very excited. I got chicken pox, which over Easter. So I didn't get to go to church. I didn't get to wear my new dress with hat or shoes. And cousin Jill had to stay home with me. It was awesome, though. I loved that. That was cool part.
Okay.
But I was very disappointed about not being able to wear my new Easter bonnet.
Oh. We only got hats sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we went to my grandmother's church, and for grandma's church.
Did they wear hats all the time?
I mean, yeah. Like, they're old school. Like, even now, some of the ladies still wear hats at her church. Last time I was...
I think it's so sweet.
Yeah. Mother's Day, too.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of hats at my grandmother's church. But the church that we went to was not really a hat church.
Okay.
So
ours wasn't either. So it was just Easter.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, for Easter, a lot of people
just
didn't.
Just as kids. My mom would never be caught dead in a hat.
Well, my mom, hats. My mom was a very good dresser.
Yeah.
My mom was a really good dresser. In fact, when she came here, the last time she came here to visit, we were on the train going to Brooklyn because she'd always wanted to go to Brooklyn Tabernacle.
Oh, yeah.
And she was wearing a hat. It wasn't full-on church lady hat, but it was like a nice little hat. No, it did not. It was a nice little hat.
Nice.
And she had on like a nice little suit. It was very, very classy.
That was cute.
She was so precious.
I love it.
And so we're on the 4 or 5 train. And this family was like, the gentleman gave up his seat so my mom could sit there. And the whole family was like, you just look so nice. It's so nice to see people dress up for church. They were so lovely to her. And my mom did, like she was a good dresser. And she was like, I'm going to church. Also, I'm going to Brooklyn Tabernacle, which was like her dream.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I will say that anytime I see an older lady that is dressed to the nines, mm-hmm. I always try to make a point to say that they look really lovely.
It's so good.
There was this woman that I passed when I was living in Washington Heights, and she was wearing red and white polka dot dress, T-length, with red tights, white shoes, gloves.
Stop!
And a matching hat. And she was wearing, like, full-on red lipstick.
Love it!
Full beat. Loved her. And I was walking toward her, mm-hmm. and I just had to say
of
something.
Of course. Yes, you
and
did.
And I stopped her with my hand on her arm, and I said, I just want to let you know, you look so beautiful today. And the smile she gave me was payment enough. It was the sweetest moment. It was so nice to be able to let her know that she blessed me just by dressing up the way she did. She was so precious.
I love it. I love it so much.
Me too.
So all that to say, it's Easter resurrection, yeah. And those Easter. Will be the the oh, themes. Yeah.
There you go. We're doing a show.
Okay, so this week's episode is the musical Into the Light.
Into the Light. Sounds uplifting.
supposed to be. It is a musical that was about the Shroud of Turin. And if you are not aware of what the Shroud of Turin is, I will give you a brief little edumacation.
Please. I know, but yes. Just for the people that don't know.
Because not everybody knows what that is. So the Shroud of Turin, and guys, this is like mostly from Wikipedia, but like, yeah. It is a length of linen cloth bearing the negative image of a man who is alleged to be Jesus of Nazareth. So people think that this is actually his burial cloth.
Right. The part of it that was wrapped around his face.
Yes.
Thus providing the negative vision of his face.
Right. And also, if you look at it, it also weirdly also looks a little bit like you can see some of the crown. And I think that could be because, you know, obviously he would be bleeding from his head, right. Because the crown was
the crown of thorns.
The crown of thorns was pressed into his brain.
Right.
He would be bleeding up there. So if they wrapped it around, you would have the blood stains from the face and right. all of the beatings. And then you would also have from his head because of the crown of thorns.
Yes.
It's kept now in the Chapel of the Holy Shroud, which is located within a complex of buildings, which includes the Turin Cathedral, the Royal Palace of Turin, and the Palazzo Chiablis.
Sure, why not? It's Italian.
In Turin, Piedmont, Northern Italy.
Okay.
The cloth itself is by some to be burial shroud, which I said already. It is first securely attested in 1390. When a local bishop wrote that the shroud was a forgery and that an unnamed artist had confessed. Radio.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. It's fascinating. A radiocarbon dating of a sample of the shroud material is consistent with this date. The Catholic Church has neither formally endorsed nor rejected the shroud. Okay. But in 1958, Pope Pius the 8th?
How many eyes?
It's a 10 and then
12.
Okay. Pope Pius XII approved of the image in association with the devotion to the holy face of Jesus. Pope John Paul II called the shroud a mirror of the gospel. Other Christian denominations such as Anglicans and Methodists have also shown devotion to the Shroud of Turin. I personally did not grow up having any kind of thoughts about the Shroud of Turin.
No, me neither.
Yeah. My church didn't really talk about it. I remember hearing about it on the news because people were still...
Very Protestant. Very, you know, like...
Yeah. We're like non-denominational
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we didn't grow up with relics.
Right.
We grew up with the Bible.
Right.
And I suppose that's a relic. But
that's really it. Like, there's...
There's not a Holy Grail.
No.
There's, you know, the stake that was driven through his feet doesn't exist somewhere. I can't remember what they call that now, but
yeah, those are things that we grew up knowing existed somewhere, but they're not things that
they're not holy to us.
Right. Their diverse arguments have been made in scientific and popular publications claiming to prove that the cloth is the authentic burial shroud of Jesus, based on disciplines ranging from chemistry to biology and medical forensics to optical image analysis. In 1988, three radiocarbon dating tests dated a corner piece of the shroud from the Middle Ages between the years 1260 and 1390. Some shroud researchers have challenged the dating, arguing the results were skewed by the introduction of material from the Middle Ages to the portion of the shroud used for radiocarbon dating. However, all of the hypotheses used to challenge the radiocarbon dating have been scientifically refuted, including the medieval repair hypothesis, the biocontamination hypothesis, and the carbon monoxide hypothesis. Forensic anthropologist Matteo Borini and chemistry professor, Luigi G. used a live volunteer and a mannequin to study how blood from Jesus' crucifixion and spear would have flowed onto his burial shroud. Using both human and synthetic blood, they were unable to find a single position in which the blood flowed onto the experimental cloths to create the stain pattern on the Shroud of Turin. They published their findings in the Journal of Forensic Sciences on July 10th, 2018. So that was just last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I found out. Yeah, I found
out. Just let it go.
I know. I mean.
Let people believe what they want to believe.
Really.
It's not hurting anybody.
Right. Right. Just let it be. Mm-hmm. Okay. The musical, mm-hmm. The Shroud of Turin. Why a musical? I will be honest. I don't know why still. And I titled this portion that, and I was like, don't know the answer. Sorry, guys. I don't know the answer. The musical was based on a 1978 scientific expedition to determine whether the shroud was really worn by Jesus or not. The playbill of the musical Into the Light stated that while Into the Light was a work of fiction, it has remained faithful to the findings of that expedition. Dean Jones was excited to be part of the project as he was a Christian. He passed away 4 years ago and believed that theater should inspire and lift the spirit. Okay, so I'll just let you know what the synopsis was. Mm. So the synopsis is James Prescott, a skeptical physicist from Los Alamos, belongs to an American scientific expedition attempting to determine the truth or otherwise of the Turin Shroud, the linen relic revered by true believers as Jesus' burial cloth. James's obsession with this scientific mission leads him to neglect his wife, Kate, and young son, Matthew, for the lab. The son, to compensate for his father's absence, places his faith in a jolly fantasy friend whom no one else can see.
Was his name Jesus?
It was not.
Oh.
It was not. Okay, so Dean Jones plays James Prescott, the physicist, who goes to try to prove whether or not this relic is real. And the findings in the 1978 expedition found that the shroud was not real. Mm. Spoiler alert, by the end of the musical, James Prescott also, you know, comes to this conclusion that, you know, maybe the shroud isn't real. But weirdly, a lot of the reviewers who saw this also felt like, even though the scientific expedition was like, no, this isn't real, mm-hmm. The show is still trying in its own way to prove that it is real.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of reviewers felt that it was a very mission-oriented musical. Like, they were trying to use it as a form of evangelism, I guess. Yeah. But it's funny. It doesn't seem like it was a form of evangelism in the way that, like, Jesus is real as much as, like, this piece of fabric really had his face imprinted right. on it. Yeah. Okay. So some of the musical numbers were, the prologue was called Poltergeists. Neat, not neat. Okay, you can go on YouTube, and if you go on YouTube and look for the set of reviews that's about 7 minutes long of this show, they will give you a clip of the song, It Can All Be Explained. And mind you, the Dean Jones and the gentleman who plays Father Frank, his name is William Perry. They sing the crap out of that song. Awesome. Like, they're...
good performances.
Yeah, wonderful performances. Like, their voices are gorgeous. But the song is... Okay. There's another musical that shall not be named wherein the title of the song slash also title of the musical is said repeatedly as the chorus.
I hate it when shows do that, when the lyricist does that.
Yeah. So that's the same for It Can All Be Explained.
Ugh, okay.
Just know.
You really only needed to be reminded of the song title
right.
once or twice.
It's really true.
Maybe just in the chorus?
Yeah, but like the whole chorus is It Can All Be Explained. Oh, like that was... You guys can go, like I said, you can go on YouTube and watch it. But again, those two gentlemen, they sing the crap out of it. Like, awesome. It's really beautiful. Their voices are beautiful. And then the most controversial song in the musical is called Let There Be Light. And it is controversial because you have Archbishop Parisi singing and dancing with a bunch of nuns. And so a lot of reviewers had a difficult time with it. And I don't know that it was, I do think, you know, it's 1986 when this comes out. So I do think some of it was they were not used to necessarily having nuns and priests sing and dance in that way. Right. And now we have the musical nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
So people are not.
Now it's all over the place.
Right. It's not as.
Yeah.
You can get a little, I mean, even nowadays you can get like one of those little Bobby sort of dancing nuns and like put it on your, you know, so it's not.
Nuns are much more accessible now.
Right. I mean, Sister Act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a whole different situation.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like a really touchy point for a lot of people. And I do think part of the problem was that they didn't give the audience any time to recover from the extremely serious moment that happened right before.
Oh.
So there was this really serious moment that happens, and then immediately you launch into the song, and you have, like, a priest and nuns dancing, and it just didn't make sense to the audiences or the reviewers,
yeah.
And it felt, it just didn't feel like it was handled well, and it made watching a priest and a bunch of nuns dance and sing in such a way
right.
just feel very cartoony.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people struggled with that. Okay, so the cast was, like I said, Dean Jones as James Prescott. You had Thomas Batten as Archbishop Parisi. Susan Bigelow was Kate Prescott, his wife. Danny Girard was Matthew Prescott, his son. And then also Father Frank was played by William Perry. So, Into the Light, a musical in two acts with a prologue and 13 scenes and an epilogue, had a book by Jeff Tamburini. Music was by Lee Holdridge, and lyrics were by John Forster.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
All right, and so it went to Broadway... at the Neil Simon Theater, which is one of the theaters that is still with us. I feel like a lot of times when we do at these episodes,
we're like, oh, now it is. Or,
right. Yeah. Or it's gone.
Or it's a parking lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, I just heard a couple of weeks ago that it's called the Times Square Theater.
Yeah.
is not going to be torn down, but it will not be a theater anymore. I believe it's being turned into like office space or something like that.
Oh.
But it's the theater that's literally right next to the Lyric where Harry Potter is.
Oh, okay.
And from what I read, because I was reading Jen Ashley Tepper, I was reading her post because she's been really following this theater and really loved it.
Yeah.
Because what happened with the Lyric is like two theaters were put together.
Right.
In order to create the Lyric Theater. And then once Harry Potter, it was decided that Harry Potter would then go in that space, another renovation happened. And they had to make the backstage bigger and all of these things. So all of this reconstruction made it really impossible for the theater to become a regular theater and return to its former glory. So it's going to be, you know, transformed. Hopefully some of the aesthetics will remain. Hopefully it will not be, it won't look like one of these very sterile buildings that we have nowadays, right, which are just like so boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a fan of.
No.
But you know, I hope to be able to give you guys an update on that. Probably yeah. It's going to take a year or so, but it's a big space.
Cool.
So the first previews for Into the Light began on October 9th, 1986. The show officially opened on October 22nd, 1986. And you guys, it closed on October 26th, 1986. So after 14 previews and 6 performances, the show closed. The show cost $3 million to put up, which in today's money is $7 million. But it is still a pretty low budget because most shows yeah. cost like upwards of $12
million.
Yeah. So even by today's standards, that's not...
terrible.
No, it's not terrible. Obviously, it made none of the money back. The money was mostly raised by single backers at one backers audition in California, and it was mostly by believers.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of people were hoping and believing that this would be, you know, it's like Scandalous. So it's the same sort of situation, mm-hmm. right? Because Foursquare Church.
Right.
Put in a ton of money for it. And so I think there, and we haven't even talked about Amazing Grace yet. Like we haven't done that
right.
musical yet. And I think a lot of, you know, Pamela and I are people of faith. And so we understand that there is a desire to have shows that reflect our Christian views, our world views, mm-hmm. our, you know, and I've had this conversation with a lot of other believers, and not all of them agree with me, and that's fine. But there's a lack of excellence.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And
well, it's like they're trying to be too serious when. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
We can have whatever content you want on Broadway as long as it's entertaining. If it's entertaining, right. then it's going to run. And
right.
it will also speak to people.
Right.
But if it's not entertaining and it's got a religious theme, people are going to start putting those two things together and say, oh, another church musical?
Right.
No, thank you.
Right. Right.
There
right.
you go.
Well, because, I mean, look at the success of Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. Overt, like, that's overly Christian. Really? You know? Godspell. So happy. But I do. It's just like a lack of excellence to just
yeah.
sort of get things up so that there's something out there. But it's like, why are we not, like, if you're gonna be a person of faith
yeah.
and you're going to create something in the name of God,
mm-hmm.
then it needs to be the best. Like
yes.
he's always talking about first fruits in the Bible all of the time. So like,
yeah.
why are you just giving like pieces of like the scraps?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense.
No. Well, this is where I think those shows are successful. Where the other ones are not.
Mm-hmm.
You've got people that are not necessarily people of faith writing them.
Right.
But they are writing them because they happen to be good stories.
Right. Right.
The story of Jesus Christ and his crucifixion is a good story.
It's a good story.
The story of Joseph being sold into slavery by his 12 brothers and then bringing them out of their own famine and out of their own depravity at the end of that. That's a good story.
It's a good story.
So, of course, and Godspell is the same. It's that, it's the crucifixion story, but they tell all of these other Bible stories in it because those stories are good. That's how God wrote the Bible. He wrote it in stories so that it would be easily understood and easily accepted.
That's right.
But it doesn't make it any less
compelling
or any less moral or any less faithful because it's a good story.
Right.
Jesus knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We all have our own talents in musical, in theater, in art, in whatever it is, because they were given to us.
Right.
But a good story is a good story is a good story. We've said that before.
It's true.
It's true. And so I'll just some of the things that Frank Rich said in the New York Times, which were just really good points. Mm-hmm. he said, the evening's only dramatic tension derives from the contrived deadline imposed on James' experiment in Turin. Characters are constantly singing about quirks, particles, molecules, matter, and antimatter.
Oh, that sounds thrilling.
Metaphysics are not neglected. So one of the lines is, to measure the darkness, you must stand in the dark, but when you stand in the dark, you cannot see a thing. Listen, listen.
Lucy.
Frank Rich said songs like these are not created to set an audience dancing in the aisles. and I will say, like, one of the things that my friends and I always say, and I hear a lot of reviewers say as well, is like, when you leave the theater, did any of the songs stick in your head?
Yeah.
That's like a really important thing.
Absolutely.
And so if it's so wrought with like data.
Yeah.
You're not.
Yeah. Not interested.
No.
And I don't care about math and science. That's why I went into musical theater to be. But if you can tell me a good story that just happens to have math and science, then I'm all about it.
Side note, but it still goes. So you and I love true crime.
Yes.
We love it. And so there's this whole Elizabeth. Oh, shoot. I can't remember her last name. It's the Theranos woman.
Oh.
So there's this big scandal now with Theranos, and there's an HBO documentary, and 2020 did an awesome podcast about it, and then ABC did an awesome podcast about it, but they also did they taped the interview, so there's a great 2020 that you can watch as well. And I paid no attention to Theranos at the beginning because it's science and I don't care.
No.
So I didn't know what was going on. But now that it's like a whole true crime situation, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
So that again just speaks to the story.
I'll have to read about it now.
Right. Now it's so fascinating. So now I'm all about it because it's a good story.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So that just speaks to exactly what Pamela was talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't.
But don't make a Theranos musical. Well, Please don't do it.
But here's the thing. Like, there is a way to tell the story of the Shroud of Turin.
Mm-hmm.
They did try. They added extra characters like the wife and the son. Mm-hmm. They added in the storyline about him being an absentee father because he's so obsessed with this Shroud of Turin, whether it's real or not. So you don't have to have a song about the science behind discovering it.
Right.
You can just build up the story that you already have.
Right.
I get also, because there's not a lot to the Shroud of Turin.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still got to be something else there. You know?
I don't know. I'm like, why can't the Shroud of Turin just be the Shroud of Turin and just be like a relic that people really admire's not the right word, but see as a holy, a right. holy piece of history.
Yes.
And not it be a musical.
Right.
Because there's no story there.
It's like, I have an idea. Let's write a musical about the Hope Diamond. It's kind of similar.
Does it have a good story?
I don't know.
Oh, see?
I don't think so. Maybe it has a better story than Shroud of Turin. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyone in Ireland, tell me. I don't know. But I'm thinking maybe not. I'm thinking it's just a big old diamond. It's in Ireland, isn't it?
Girl, I don't know.
No, do you know what I'm thinking of?
What?
Not the Hope Diamond, the Blarney Stone. I'm sick a little bit right now. You can kind of hear it in my voice. So my mind is not clicking on all cylinders. But the Blarney Stone, I was going to say, you know, people just go to Ireland and touch it. But I don't think that's the Hope Diamond.
Yeah,
that's
no,
the Blarney Stone.
Yeah.
That actually might have a good story, the Blarney Stone.
Could. I don't know.
I don't know
nothing about that. Yeah, but I don't think that's the best. Yeah, I don't think that was the best idea.
No.
I'm
falling asleep just listening to you tell me about it.
Holy mackerel. Another thing I heard a lot from reviewers is they had trouble with the debate. So even though it was like a lot about metaphysics and all these things, when the main character and the priest are like having debates, like one reviewer said that it felt like they were watching a high school debate.
Oh no.
Which, mind you, high school debates can be very compelling.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was like, you didn't have to say
just
that.
Just like inexperience.
Right. And that was a common theme, was like people felt like it wasn't, it felt a little, I hate to say this, but like amateurish.
Well, and I'd be interested to see what the background is for the writers.
Yeah.
Because if they don't have a background in metaphysics.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
That they don't.
No, they didn't.
Then they're going to be at a disadvantage already.
Right.
Unless,
right.
And in 86, you didn't have Google. You had to
right.
like look things up in the library.
Go to the encyclopedia.
Like a schlub. To go through, look at the Dewey Decimal System. Oof. Talk to your librarian.
Yeah.
Do they even have librarians anymore, or is it all
yes
automated?
They do.
I
no
they
do.
Do they're very important people.
I like them.
They keep our books safe.
They do.
So if ever the end of the world happens, all we need to do is go to the library.
They'll be destroyed though at the end of the world.
Well, it depends on how the world ends. I don't know. Zombie apocalypse. Zombies don't care about books.
I know, but there are people in there, so they'll want to go in there to eat them.
And they'll have big brains because they're reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good point.
guys, 86 was a rough year for musicals. So, Moose Murders. One reviewer was like, bring back Moose Murders after he saw this.
Oh, man.
Did we do that? That's on
we
our list.
Yet. It's on the list.
Yeah, it's on the list, but
maybe
we haven't done it yet. Maybe.
Some of them are on the list, but there's not a lot of information about them, so we haven't really been able to do
right,
them.
Right.
But we'll look into it.
Also that year, Rags and Raggedy Ann had opened and closed before this. And then, okay, you guys, please, please go to YouTube and watch that 7-minute compilation of reviews, because the last one is my favorite. This poor man was like, I don't know him or have not seen him. And again, it was 86 and I was like so little. But he said the two shows I reviewed last week have since closed. And then he was talking about, he was like, and next week I'm going to see Smile, the new Marvin Hamlish musical. And I've heard really good things about it, you guys. That was also a flop. It's also on our list.
Yes.
86 was just not the best year.
It wasn't a good year.
Yeah, the 80s were rough for New York.
Yes. We were kind of living between the happiness rainbow bright of the early 80s and the gross Times Square with prostitutes and disgusting people in the later part of the 80s. So people really wanted to be like, get away from that rainbow bright phase because they were like, that's not real. What's real is this gross disgustingness that's happening and people are violent and horrible and our children are getting kidnapped.
But that's not what the musicals were about.
But that's what I mean. Like, if yeah. Raggedy Ann comes to Broadway and you're like, listen, I just got laid off.
Yeah.
And my husband left me. So I don't feel like watching Raggedy Ann on Broadway.
Although, when we did Annie, we did Annie 2.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think it was Thomas, or maybe it was Grandpa Marty. I'm not sure which one. but they said... They brought Annie at a time where people were looking for some escape because there was a lot of difficult things happening.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's sort of why things like Raggedy Ann were coming out.
That's true. They just weren't able to get a balance.
Yeah, no.
With Rags was so real.
People, yeah.
You know, people didn't want to watch them having struggle because they're struggling on their own. But they also didn't want to watch something like Raggedy Ann.
Right.
Because... I don't want to watch something all sweet and lovey. So meet me in the middle here. Yeah.
And that was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was a rough time.
It was.
Yeah, so I swear when I watched that and at the end he said, I'm gonna see Smile next and I've heard good things about it. I was like, oh no.
Oh
I'm from
alert,
the future and that's not good, sir.
I'm from the future.
Sorry, friends.
So funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So that is Rags. I do want to say, to end more on a positive note, there were some really nice things said about the performances. Peter Howard's Pit Band are solid. Mr. Gerard ably carries the evening's one spirited song. Act One's Trading Solos, Mr. Perry, Miss Bigelow, Casper Ruse, and Thomas Batten bring firm voices to notes that might better be left unsung. But they did a good job, though. They did a really good job.
Yeah.
And as for Mr. Jones, he is as relaxed, ingratiating, and nearly as boyish a musical performer as when he last appeared on Broadway on the same stage in Company, which was 15 years before this happened.
Cool.
So the performances were good.
Yeah.
The band was great. It's just, you know, the show was what it was. Also, you all can go on the Lincoln Center's Performing Arts Library and you can see photos of Dean Jones being in the musical, and the one of the ones I saw, it's like so perfect because he's standing there at the downstage and he's belting, like you can tell from the way he's standing, he's belting, and there's like this light and I just hit the lamp in here, there's like this light shining over him and I was like, that's it right there. That's
amazing. He just walked into the light. Metaphorically and literally.
Literally, he did. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no cast recording.
Okay.
From
what I understand, it was probably not a bad decision.
Yeah. You can, like I said, you can go on YouTube, and I definitely, when you watch that 7-minute video, it also has the song with the priest and the nuns dancing.
Okay.
So you can get an idea of what people were having, you know, a time with. And I don't think that would bother any of us now because we're so used to that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it was a little bit of the times and also the way that it was placed within the musical that made it off-putting.
Editing, man. It's all about the editing.
Yeah. And I didn't find anything out really about like out of town tryouts.
Okay.
And the thing that Pamela and I always say is like, y'all, please, you gotta try it out first.
Take it to Indianapolis,
to
Boston, to Denver, to San Diego, anywhere you want, really. Anywhere in the United States. Take it anywhere else besides New York to see an everyman's opinion of it, or to get an everyman's opinion. and then work on those issues.
Yeah.
Take it on another tryout, then bring it to Broadway.
Yeah.
But do like just a bulk of previews, at least 2 weeks of previews.
Something.
Unless you're really... I do feel like there are some shows that, because they started out as like concept shows, mm-hmm. have a bit of an advantage mm-hmm. because they've already kind of been tried.
Right, right.
Even if it was just in New York, but, you know, on what's that Union Square Theater? The Gym.
Mm-hmm. The Gym at Judson. I love that place.
Me too. Yeah. But like, you know, shows go there a lot, mm-hmm. you know, that are just... They're like, this is my idea. I kind of want to do this. And they do this, you know, staged reading of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lightly staged. So it's not just, you know, behind binders. But, you know, it's not a full interpretation of it. And I think those shows have actually a bit of an advantage.
Yeah.
They still should go in a tryout
mm-hmm.
somewhere else. Boston.
Yeah.
L.A.
Yeah.
Seattle.
Yeah.
Oh, here's one.
What?
We should have mentioned in the... intermission. So my friend Jesse is a swing in the new show Marie Still Dancing, which is playing at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle right
yeah.
now. It's about the Renoir girl. You know, Renoir paintings, the Phantom of the Opera ballerinas are inspired by his paintings.
Okay.
They're the ballerinas
yeah.
that you really only see from side and the back. Gorgeous.
I love
the
those.
Tutus sticking straight out. These gorgeous girls. Well, the show is, from what I understand, based on Renoir's muse,
mm-hmm.
this ballerina
mm-hmm.
who really was very poor and very downtrodden. And he manipulated the situation and really kind of took advantage of her.
Mm-hmm.
Might not have been a good relationship. But don't quote me on that, because maybe that's just me saying it
okay
with confidence, and I don't know, but it looks beautiful, and my friend says that it's just it's been such a joy to be in. Terrence Mann is in it.
Oh,
I think it's Aaron,
your favorite.
Sincerity?
Is it?
Oh gosh, now I have to look. I can't say anything with confidence right now. Wait,
is it them?
Stand by.
Okay. Yeah, that place is where Scandalous got tried.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of things go.
A lot of things tried there.
To Seattle. Aaron Sinflaherty, I was
It
right.
is them.
Phew.
Oh, I love them.
Yes. Tyler Peck plays the Renoir, or not Renoir, Degas. I'm sorry.
Yes, Degas.
Degas.
I was like, Renoir? Is that true?
It's
okay.
not Renoir. It's
yeah,
same time
I love
period.
The Degas paintings.
Yes.
Yeah, the ballerinas, the blue... Ballerinas in blue, or there's uh-huh. the one where they're in blue. That's my favorite one.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
He painted that ballerina a lot. There mm-hmm. is a lot with featuring that
ballerina,
that dancer.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. There you have it.
That's neat. I didn't know that.
All right, get out of my apartment. I'm tired. No, really.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, guys. So that's Into the Light.
Yes.
I can't tell you how to watch it or listen, but at least go to that
YouTube.
Yeah, that 7-minute YouTube,
yeah.
really easy to find. It's the only Into the Light musical anything on YouTube.
Awesome. I'm going to go listen.
Yeah.
You said their voices are really great, and
yeah.
the critics agreed with that. So.
Yeah. They are good.
Worth it.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you.
Happy Easter.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage.
and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.